ABC Listen. Podcasts, radio, news, music, and more.
The world right now is a disaster. It's easy to feel helpless. But there was a moment when millions of people around the world said enough. I'm Sisson Kim Simong. Join me for Boycott, the fight to end apartheid, how Australians joined others around the world to push back against racism and won.
Whites-only teams, we thought that to the average Australian, that would be despicable.
Boycott, the fight to end apartheid. Search for ABC Rewind on ABC Listen or wherever you get your podcasts.
To hear the Reserve Bank talk, it's prepared to put Australia into a recession if it has to, in order to bring inflation back down.
We don't want to have a recession, but if it's hard to get inflation down, then, you know, we're going to have to deal with that, possibly.
Governor Michelle Bullock said she hoped that by lifting rates now, before we come to expect continuing high inflation, she could avoid doing worse damage later. But those of us who use petrol are already suffering damage from relentlessly climbing prices, and it's set to get worse. The Prime Minister has called together the National Cabinet. The Governor acted as if she had little choice but to push up rates this week. But did she? Welcome to The Economy Stupid on ABC Radio National with me, Peter Martin, and someone who has helped shape how the Reserve Bank thinks over the best part of two decades, Gianni LaCava, who's a former senior research manager at the bank, now with the E61 Institute, and Sherelle Murphy, the Oceania chief economist for EY, who's also worked at the bank and has tracked its work for the ANZ and the Australian Financial Review, as well as the Australian Trade and Investment Commission. Welcome, Gianni. Welcome back, Sherelle.
Lovely to be here, Peter.
Thanks for having me.
Sherelle, the governor told us this week on Tuesday that the vote to push up rates was split. Five members of the relevant board voted in favour. Four voted against, wanting to keep rates on hold for at least a few more weeks. How would you characterise her thinking, the thinking of the majority?
So the majority are clearly concerned that the risks to inflation have gotten to the point where they can't sit still because of the escalation in the conflict in the Middle East, which, as we all know, has lifted oil prices around the world and is already flowing through to some domestic prices.
What is it about petrol? I mean, I know it's used for all sorts of things, but does it have a greater significance for inflation than that?
Petrol is very visible. It's on our streets. We can see the price flashing at us as we drive along. In fact, on my way to record this, I noticed $2.25 in Canberra.
It must be the most signposted price there is.
That's right. We don't see the price of milk changing in front of us in kind of, you know, 50 centimetre high lettering, do we?
Does it have a sort of outsized effect then on how we think about inflation? And is that the problem for the governor?
Partly, yes. I think that, you know, clearly it is very visible. The political attention on this has been incredible, hasn't it? But I think beyond that, it's much more to do with the genuine flow-on effects of higher energy prices into the economy. So, of course, the price of petrol goes up, the price of transport goes up. The price of fertilizer is going up or will certainly go up further. That too, of course, can eventually affect food prices and will have an impact at the supermarket. But more importantly is the impact on inflationary expectations. So just to give you a little bit of data on this, the ANZ Roy Morgan Consumer Confidence Index measures consumer inflationary expectations. And in the last observation, which was just taken over the last week.
Just after the strike on Iran.
After that, absolutely. And you know, very recent data. It's up at 6.7% now. So it's
suggesting what people are expecting, inflation that high when the target is 2.5%. Of course, people always expect higher inflation than we have. But
than actual.
That's
yep.
Big.
That's right. And even if you take the four-week average, it's at 5.8% at the moment, which is the highest since back in 2022 when the economy was firing and really moving along at a very significant pace.
Gianni, what do you think the split on the board indicates? We weren't told how board members voted until recently. The rules have changed mid last year. This is the closest to a 50-50 split we've seen. What would have been weighing on the minds of those who counselled caution, who said, well, let's not ramp up rates just yet?
Yeah, so I think there would have been agreement on what to do with interest rates, but disagreement on when to do it. It's waiting to see just how big this oil price shock is going to be and just how pervasive and persistent it's going to be. I've heard some people talking about COVID 2.0. I think if that would be the case.
COVID 2.0.
Yeah, I think that would be the sort of thing that we could be talking, especially when...
The biggest crisis since COVID.
Yeah, and the fact that retailers now have very efficient supply chains, so they hold very little inventory compared to their sales, means that when there is a sort of supply chain shock coming along, that can actually lead to big stock out risk. So we obviously saw it with things like toilet paper during COVID. And I think anyone that's tried to buy furniture recently will know it's very exciting when you purchase it, but it can take 3 to 6 months before it gets in your door. So these sorts of shocks can emanate quite quickly through the Australian economy.
So we've got two things. We've got prices, and the Reserve Bank is onto that because it's part of its job. But we've also got the threat of the economy really closing down, not only constraining the supply of all sorts of things, but also constraining demand as people lose their jobs or are unable to spend. In an extreme case, down the track, might the Reserve Bank in fact have to cut rates because of the damage that this unfolding crisis does?
It's been a real monetary policy roller coaster over the last few years with the rates going up in 2022 and 23 and then coming down in 25, going up again in 26. And yeah, there's a real possibility that they come back down in 2027. And I think, again, it really hinges on just how big and bad things get overseas and how much of that flows through to Australia. So the only good thing is that the RBA is buying itself some room to move by moving rates now so that they
have... moving them up so it could move them down.
Exactly. And also we have a bit of room to move on things like fiscal policy as well. So, and yeah, putting COVID aside, we still hold that kind of record of nearly 30 years without a recession. So got to have some faith that we can manage it. But I think it's a real risk and people will talk about it more over the coming weeks.
Do you see that risk, Sherelle, of essentially bringing on a recession, certainly a per capita recession? I think that's probably certain now, but the economy turning down rather than turning up. The Reserve Bank's been worried about strength.
I mean, yes, it's definitely a risk. And I was actually a little surprised at how that was underplayed in both the post-meeting statement and also the post-meeting press conference by the governor. Not to say that I think that there's an imminent risk of recession. I definitely don't. However, it was very much a second order issue. I will say, though, that that's also the beauty of monetary policy. It can respond to what's going on in the economy at this point in time, including, of course, the Reserve Bank's own forecasts. If those forecasts change, then the Reserve Bank can change course, and they've got an opportunity to do that every 4 to 6 weeks in this meeting, and they could do it in between meetings as well. And, in certain emergencies, they have and they would. So there's no point in preempting something that we don't have any facts to support. What they have to do is base their decision on the facts that they have today. That's what they did. And if those facts change, and if they change dramatically enough, they will change policy.
John Maynard Keynes, I think, said, when the facts change, I change my mind. But it's also the case that when the facts change in the economy, you can change monetary policy very quickly. Mm. And I think we just saw that with the movement from rate cuts to rate increases. As the facts kind of change, it could also happen again.
When the facts change, we change our minds here on The Economy Stupid, as we should, as the Reserve Bank should. And this might mean that further rate rises aren't assured, or it might. We just don't know. It's what we're trying to find out here on The Economy Stupid on ABC Radio National with me, Peter Martin, joined this week by Reserve Bank watchers and former Reserve Bank staffers Sherelle Murphy and Gianni LaCava. Gianni, one question the governor sidestepped very skillfully at that press conference on Tuesday this week was whether it was government spending or private spending that had been pushing up inflation, forcing the bank to push up interest rates. It's a politically charged question. And at the E61 Institute, you've used data to arrive at a different, more complicated answer. It actually knocks some sense into the debate. You've identified, I suppose, a middle way of spending, which is growing. It's called social transfers in kind. What are they?
It's not the most meaningful, understandable term. It's very much a statistical thing, but it's essentially...
I like it.
Oh, do you?
I do.
I think it sounds nice, but I always have to go
what's
and
the acronym?
Google exactly what's this thing again?
STIK.
Stick.
Oh, that's good.
Stick is good. But yeah, it's essentially things that consumers... households consume, but are essentially funded by the government for either that they're free or they're heavily subsidised. So examples are things like Medicare, the pharmaceutical benefit scheme, childcare subsidies, the NDIS. These all fit under STIC or social transfers in kind.
They're government funded, but directed by the people who choose to go to the doctor or childcare.
That's the really nice example that we sort of use in some of this research. When you visit the GP, The bit that you pay for, the out-of-pocket expense, that's considered household spending, consumer spending. But the bit that Medicare covers, that's considered government spending. And I think in some sense that's odd. And when you combine these two things to say, look, this is just one big transaction going to the doctor, you get a very different picture on what's been driving demand in the economy.
What's the implications of that for trying to rein in spending? One I can think of is that... The government can't really rein in this sort of spending, not without changing the rules, because it doesn't direct when people decide to go to the doctor, decide to use childcare, decide to use the NDIS.
No, it's a very difficult thing for both policymakers, both monetary and fiscal. This spending is basically driven by these underlying factors, like demographics. So it's an aging population, it's rising rates of disability, growing need for childcare. You know, changing interest rates doesn't have much of an impact directly on that. So what does it mean? If these components of spending are going to continue to grow strongly, then the RBA has to clamp down even harder on parts of the economy that are sensitive to interest rates. And we know that's things like the housing market and consumer durables. And that does lead to a sort of very difficult communications challenge for the RBA.
It is a really interesting and almost opaque form of spending, isn't it? And I think that the work that Gianni's done here is really enlightening. I would say, though, that if the government really wanted to do something about this, if it was really concerned about the inflationary impact of government spending, it could actually change it. You'd have to take things away, though, from people. And that, of course, is an incredibly difficult thing to do. It is an interesting debate because should the government always take for granted that these things are just set in stone and never should change in an economy which is changing?
It does mean, though, does it, Gianni, that I will be unlikely to change my behaviour insofar as using childcare or what have you goes just because I have another big chunk of mortgage payments, because it's not my money, I'm spending most of it.
No, that's right. But I think
it'll make interest rates less effective as a tool, and perhaps they would have been once.
Yeah, that's one of the implications, that monetary policy will be slightly weaker than it was, 10, 20 years ago, if this is where most of the spending is. The idea is that you will still potentially cut back on other things, like maybe you don't go out and buy a car or buy a house or other things that are sensitive to interest rates. But yeah, that's correct.
Is this part of a broader thing, Sherelle and Gianni, that once upon a time the government used to support poor people on the whole by handing cash? These days it's increasingly handing money to everyone in the form of subsidies for services. And perhaps this changes... sort of crept up on us.
I think it has. And it's not bad or good, but it is a kind of a political judgment in a way. So we've gotten into this economy where this sort of share of government in the economy, whether it be through social transfers or actual government spending on things like roads and bridges, has definitely been growing. And that's fixing a lot of problems. It's improving the standard of living for some people. There is no doubt about it. We can't complain about this as such, but it does also have consequences in the sense that there may be, maybe in some areas, a sort of a crowding out of private sector activity. There may be inflationary pressures coming through from some of this. And there certainly is a sort of a change in the types of consumption that's going on under our noses, even though we might not even realise it.
I suppose one thing that the government can do, Sherelle, is increase taxes. That has the same effect as cutting spending. Indeed, it's got a report this week on the capital gains tax from the Senate. It's likely to wind back those tax breaks. Does the Reserve Bank, do you think, need a bit of help from the government to wind back spending? And then I suppose, given what we were talking about earlier, is there a problem that if it does that too much, we might be, because of the oil crisis, heading into recessionary territory anyway, and it might need to reverse it?
It is a really tricky dilemma for the government, isn't it, going into this budget? And I shouldn't even snigger at all about this, because, of course, the government would like to help households in this very difficult kind of environment where they're looking at price rises, mortgage increases, which are tightening what is probably already quite tight budgets for quite a number of households already. But if they do that, the only thing they're going to do is create more problems, because essentially it just means that the Reserve Bank has to go more heavily on interest rate hikes at the consumer level. There's no sort of two ways about it, because the economy only has so much capacity. And if you push up against that capacity, you get inflation. The only way you can genuinely fix this is by increasing the productive capacity of the economy. That's where the real lever, or the most powerful lever, is. But of course, it's also one of the hardest, and it's slow.
Who'd want to be putting together the federal budget? Well, the Treasurer would. Is doing it now. The Reserve Bank, in the meantime, has to use the lever it has. And we're about to discuss how that lever works on The Economy Stupid on ABC Radio National with me, Peter Martin, and Sherelle Murphy, who's Oceania Chief Economist for EY, and Gianni LaCava, who's Research Director at the E61 Institute. Gianni, this latest mortgage increase will add $100 per month to the scheduled payments for someone on a large mortgage, on top of the $100 per month last time. It's often said that this transmission channel, the one through mortgage rates, is particularly direct in Australia because so many of us have variable mortgages. But again, at E61, you've set out to examine this and found that the transmission mechanism is far more indirect, far more muted than we previously thought. You examined those big interest rate changes in 2022 and 23. What did you find?
So what we do is we focus in on the period just after COVID, where we saw a big increase in interest rates over 2022 and 2023. And we think about what happened in the context of a literally like a policy experiment, where you've got a treatment group of mortgage borrowers that are on variable rate mortgages. So they're going to be exposed to this treatment of higher interest rates. And then you've got a control group of fixed rate mortgage people who are not exposed to that treatment. And so what we do with this de-identified bank transactions data is actually find that, yeah, as rates went up, the repayments of the people with variable rate mortgages went up a lot compared to the people with fixed rate mortgages. But that didn't feed through to their spending at all. They ended up just spending pretty much as much on average as people on fixed
rate
mortgages.
You know this because of their bank account data. You've looked inside de-identified, anonymized bank account data and seen that even though people had to pay and did pay more on their mortgages, their other spending changed very little.
Yeah, and that was just a shock to me. And I asked our research team, can you check that again? Because that contradicts what I found 10 years ago. That's got to be wrong. I can't be
wrong. That's when you worked for the Reserve Bank. Right. And you were putting forward this narrative that we were particularly affected by mortgage rates.
No, what has happened and the way we reconcile it is that this was a very unusual time during COVID, as we all know. There was a high level of government income support through various payments to households. People couldn't go out and spend because of the restrictions on going out. And also people were worried about the future and they were saving a lot. And what's happened is that people have saved up a lot of money in redraw and offset accounts.
Oh, so they haven't necessarily put it in the bank. They've sort of put money, in many cases, into their home loan, but then they can take it out again.
Exactly. And so they can use that to buffer against any increase in interest rates. You can just sort of reduce how much you're paying over and above what you're expected to pay, or you can run down the buffers that you have. And that is highly unusual across the world. We haven't been able to find another country where these kinds of mortgage products, offset and redraw facilities, are used anywhere near as much, and we don't really know why. They are available in New Zealand, they're available in the UK, but they're just not as popular as they are in Australia. And if one of your listeners happens to know the answer, I'd love to hear from them. But it's interesting, and it's the thing that has kind of, at least during COVID and during that big increase in interest rates, was the thing that protected people's spending from the rise in interest rates. Saying that, as we go into another period of potentially higher interest rates, when we look at the data, the starting point for people with these big liquidity buffers is quite different. They don't have the buffers that they had during COVID. And so you wouldn't want to see another kind of 400 basis points of increase in interest rates. Otherwise, it could get quite nasty.
But right at the moment, around the country, people are not, after Michelle Bullock's announcement on Tuesday and the other announcement a month or so before, people are not having discussions in households en masse about, rates have gone up, we're going to have to cut back our other spending. That's not happening. And if that is not happening, will that mean the Reserve Bank needs, assuming that it, regards this as an important goal, that it needs to push up rates even higher to contain spending?
Potentially. There are other, what they call channels of monetary transmission, so other ways that interest rates affect people's spending. It might be the case that as interest rates go up, house prices fall, people might feel less wealthy as a result of that and spend less. So there could be other reasons, but you're right that if they're not seeing the impact on their cash flow, that it's quite possible that we, again, won't see much of an impact on spending.
What's been your observation, Sherelle, about how responsive we are to interest rate hikes and cuts?
I think this research is really important because it does show the sort of, again, those underlying changes in the way people think about their cash flow, just may or may not be having an impact. Because of the other channels of monetary policy transmission, though, I suspect that overall it is still working. And at the moment, actually, the exchange rate channel is working really well for the Reserve Bank.
This is when it pushes up interest rates, it pushes up the exchange rate, which makes goods from overseas cheaper.
That's right, exactly. And that can reduce prices or at least put downward pressure on price growth. And you might even think about this in the context of your own spending. And if there wasn't conflict in the Middle East, if the currency becomes cheaper, it becomes more attractive to take your holiday overseas than in Australia, perhaps.
Oh, we won't be getting jet fuel. Don't worry about that, Sherelle.
This is true. This is kind of, it's negated my example to some extent. However, it certainly means that we are buying more things from overseas, though. And in fact, I just noticed in the Westpac card data that they made a comment about the fact that a lot of our spending on cards is actually, the growth at least in that is in overseas goods and services, not so much in domestic. So I wonder if that's a direct example of the exchange rate channel working quite well.
The last big recession we had in the early 1990s was probably caused by the Reserve Bank going too far. It's been likened to pulling on a brick with a piece of elastic. It doesn't move for a long while, so you pull harder and you pull harder. Eventually it moves and you know about it. It's pretty unpleasant. Is there a risk that the Reserve Bank will make the same mistake again, simply because as it pushes up interest rates, at least for quite a while, we're likely to keep spending as we have been?
I have to say the sentiment that I'm reading at the moment is very much that's not the case. So you look at the consumer confidence numbers, they were down 4.9% in the last week. That's back to 2020 levels. This has to be, to some extent anyway, a reflection of not only the fact that the Reserve Bank has put the cash rate up by 25 basis points 2 months in a row, but there's talk of more and petrol prices have gone up. I mean, I do get a sense that people are paying attention to what's going on. And I think that that is going to cause just those occasional discretionary decisions to be rethought. You know, do we get takeout on Friday night? Do we book that holiday? You know, do we buy a new pair of shoes? In my case, I'm like going, yeah, probably not a good idea.
So if you want to do the right thing for the country or the right thing for the governor, you should perhaps maybe say no to some spending, and then maybe she will not feel the need and her board won't feel the need to push up interest rates higher.
Ideally, yes. And my sincere apologies to all my favourite retailers out there.
And the thing that I'll be looking at, and I think will be really key, as with a lot of things in Australia, is the housing market and how that kind of plays out over the next few months.
It'd be nice to take some steam out of that. Finally, I know predictions are for mugs, but the Reserve Bank meets again at the start of May, just before the federal budget. A quick answer from each of you, please. Sherelle first. Are we likely to see yet another interest rate hike then, the third in a row?
On balance, I think yes. I think with the types of changes to forecast that we're seeing in our own numbers and in many of my fellow colleagues in the markets numbers, plus the fact that Treasury themselves have made it clear that they're looking at a CPI rate of sort of in the high fours and maybe even in the fives, there is, I think, every likelihood that the Reserve Bank will act. And remember that the cash rate at 4.1% isn't actually that high. It's probably restrictive, yes, but it was up at one more from this, so 4.35% beginning of or end of 2024. You know, we've been here before. It's not out of the realm of possibility.
Gianni, do you see a third rate hike in a row?
As you say, Peter, I think these forecasts are a bit of a mug's game, and I'm particularly muggy. I think I've got the last two interest rate decisions completely wrong. I thought they wouldn't raise rates, so I've obviously been out of the world of central banking for too long. So treat my forecast with a grain of salt. In fact, rather than forecasting what I think they will do, I might say what I think they should do, and I think they should actually hold. I just think there's a heightened uncertainty right now, given what's happening overseas. And yeah, I think we need a little bit more time to figure out exactly what's happening and whether the effects on activity are going to outweigh the effects on inflation.
We know there's a lot that can happen just in a fortnight. It was only a bit over a fortnight ago that the US attacked Iran. And I suppose there's 6 or 7 weeks till the next meeting. Thank you both. Before we go, anything to look out for in the days and weeks ahead, as is traditional? Sherelle.
So one thing I've been encouraging everyone, but particularly women, to look out for is their own finances. There is a substantial difference between men and women. I've recently done some work on this, and on every measure, on salary, on home ownership, on business ownership, on wealth, on superannuation, on financial literacy, there's a significant gap between men and women, and we have to close this. And this can't happen in a vacuum. It needs to be done by us all talking about it and women taking a lot of control of their own situations.
Gianni, what would you draw attention to?
Perhaps not surprisingly, I flagged it a little earlier. I think I'll be watching closely what happens in the housing market. I think it's interesting that, you know, it's almost a triple whammy for housing investors over the next little period. So we've obviously had the tightening in monetary policy with the increase in interest rates. We've also had a tightening in macroprudential policy. So APRA changed the rules around the size of loans that people can borrow, investors in particular. And then with all the talk about what the government might do with the capital gains tax discount, there could be a tightening on that front too. So I think all of these things, any one of them on their own, I don't think will have a big impact, but putting them all together, that could have a bit of an impact on sentiment amongst housing investors. And we know that housing investors have a disproportionate impact on cycles in house prices. So watching closely what happens in the housing market, I think, will be important.
Thank you, Gianni LaCava, Research Director at the E61 Institute and a former Manager of Research at the Reserve Bank, and Sherelle Murphy, the Oceania Chief Economist for EY, also formerly with the Reserve Bank. Thank you both so much.
Thank you, Peter.
Thanks, Peter. Thanks, Sherelle.
And thank you for listening. You can find our episodes on the ABC Listen app or on ABC Radio National Thursdays. If you have any thoughts or questions or comments, no economic question is stupid, you can email us. That address, theeconomy.stupid@abc.net.au. I'm Peter Martin. We'll see you next week.
You've been listening to an ABC podcast. Discover more great ABC podcasts, live radio and exclusives on the ABC Listen app.